One of the many quirks of being a pastor is you end up being around a lot of people at the worst moment in their life, which usually boils down to when they hear of the death of a loved one. And it's always one of those moments where there's usually tears and there's anger and there's what if and why is this? And it's one of those rare moments in life where it is expected to be all about you. You don't hear that often, but generally, yes, everybody expects when you're in your own misery and your own pain and your own grief to just take a moment to heal, to process, to pray. In our reading today, we're given an image of when Jesus finds out that a loved one of his has died, how does he respond? Because John the Baptizer, as some people call him, just to clarify that he wasn't a member of First Baptist, John the Baptizer was Jesus' cousin. One of the earliest church historians record that John the Baptist and Jesus as cousins were actually so identical looking that some people thought they were twins. And which explains Herod's reaction when he sees Jesus and says, "This is John come back to life." But they were together even when they were babies in the womb. When Mary, when she's pregnant with Jesus, goes to see Elizabeth, and John leaps in anticipation of this Jesus coming into the world. And then when they're in their 30s, John gets to be the one who baptizes Jesus. And he's also the first one to say, you know, here comes this Lamb of God to take away the sins of all the world. John was one of the most special people in Jesus' life. And he gets killed, and it's brutal, and it's ugly. It's the intersection of lust and violence and vengeance. When a mother uses her own daughter as the axe to cut off John the Baptist's head, so he would stop calling out her sin. And that story gets spread from neighbor to neighbor, person to person, from John's disciples to Jesus. And how does Jesus respond? Well, he doesn't put up stiff upper lip, smile, and just go about his day as if nothing happened. And he doesn't say, well, God just needed another angel in his choir. And he doesn't put together a fun celebration of life with balloons and bouncy houses and a polka band. He goes to a desolate place by himself. You can see the sky is gray. And the clouds move in. You can see the tears running down his face. Is this his first clear picture that if this is how they treat John, how are they going to treat me? Jesus goes to get away from the crowds. And yet the crowds just want Jesus. So even when he goes into the wilderness, even when now he's certainly going to be under the threat of death, the crowds just go with him. It's very different than followers of Jesus today. There's no complaining, there's no grumbling. No trying to put together a great worship service or, hey, we got coffee and donuts. Cool website. We'll raise your kids for you. None of that. They're out in the wilderness. There's no chairs. There's no pews. There's no air conditioning. There's no coffee. But the crowds just want Jesus, and they go. And Jesus is the great physician, because even when it would be perfectly normal for him to say, you know, I need some time by myself, go see somebody else, I'm going to take a little family leave, I'm going to go to Cancun, whatever. Jesus is the great physician, because even when he has no reason to have to be in a place to heal, he does. Jesus goes to the wilderness simply for peace and quiet. But what he finds is crying and bleeding. And is it a miracle that Jesus heals those who are sick? Yes. And is it a miracle that Jesus feeds those who are starving? Yes. But the greatest miracle is that even on the worst day of his life to that point, Jesus has compassion on the people. They start with 5 loaves and 2 fish for 5,000 men, not counting the women and children. Women and kiddos, sorry. It's just how they did it back then. Some believe that that's actually goes back to the book of Genesis when marriage is instituted. And God says, a man and a woman shall no longer be two flesh, but one. That's actually why they counted a husband and wife as one, or a married family as one. But they start with these 5 loaves and 2 fish, and that's all they have. Thousands of people, one little bit of food, and what do you do with that? In some of your families, when there's a problem, right? Got all these people and almost no food. If there's a problem, how do you deal with it? In some of your families, you just grumble about it, right? We're going to complain about this together and we'll feel better. In some families, like mine growing up, you don't talk about problems. They're not there, right? And that would have been another solution. Let's just not talk about this. Pretend nobody's hungry. But what does Jesus do? He lifts up and thanks God for what they have. I mean, no matter what your circumstances, how bare your pantry, or how short your bank account balance, or how long your list of aches and pains, do you have a measure you can lift up and thank God for? And the miracle doesn't occur in that moment when Jesus holds it up and all of a sudden now there's 5,000 pieces of bread falling down and whacking people on the head. That's not how it goes. How it goes is Jesus takes this lunch and hands it out to the 12. And then they have to go out to the crowds with a 12th of a lunch now, right? And give this tiny sliver of a lunch to somebody. And that's when the miracle occurs. You might not think you have a lot to contribute to build up God's kingdom. You might think you just have a little sliver. But it's when you go out faithfully with that sliver that the miracle occurs. I've been to some nice banquet dinner sort of things. I'm sure you have too. You get invited to something or other, and they got the linen tablecloths and napkins, or bacon wrapped filet, fresh cut flowers everywhere. Oh, that's nice. But I don't know that it would compare to this banquet they have out in a desolate place, where Jesus is the chef and saints are the waiters and the angels are doing the dishes. And what's on the menu? Miracle after miracle. I mean, can you imagine? Can you just see their faces, right? When they're expecting to get a little crumb of bread and find a loaf of hot, fresh bread or tender, flaky fish. Can you hear the laughter? Can you hear their prayers? Started with how do you deal with the death of a loved one? And how does Jesus deal with the death of a loved one? In what would have been the most devastating day of his life, the great physician heals his patients. The good shepherd feeds his flock. The people are sick and hungry, and their doctors ask if they have insurance. The people are sick and hungry, and their friends wish them well. The people are sick and hungry, and the old church puts them on a prayer list. The people are sick and hungry, and the new church says we have new songs and colored lights. The people are sick and hungry, and the Republicans say, get a job. The people are sick and hungry, and the Democrats say, sign up for a program. The people are sick and hungry. Who will heal them? Who will feed them? The people are sick and hungry, and Jesus heals them. Jesus feeds them, and Jesus dies on the cross for their sins. The cynics may laugh. Others may balk. And the world may rush on by without caring a lick about this story. But let us each just marvel that on the worst day of his life, while the world had nothing for the sick and the hungry, Jesus had compassion.